Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Welcome to the Total Soccer Show. My name is Taylor Rockwell, and we have got some weekend to review. To do so, we've brought some thumbs. It's a thumbs up, thumbs down edition of the weekend review. Here with me are Graham and Joe. Graham Ruthven, I'm going to need a non-soccer related thing that was a thumbs up moment for you from this past weekend. I'm assuming it's two thumbs up for Bobby Martinez to Portugal.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I spent my weekend grinding my teeth over Portugal's appointment, which has now been confirmed on Monday morning, of Roberto Martinez, my favourite international soccer manager. Clearly, Portugal saw how he completely screwed up Belgium's golden generation and caused everyone in that camp to hate each other in Qatar. And Portugal thought, some of that for us, please. So yeah, he's the new Portugal manager.
Will he be bringing Thierry Henry, do you think? Will we get more Henry on the sidelines with the eyebrows?
I presume so. Okay. I mean, I thought it was a package deal at this point, Henry and Martinez. I almost said Martinez. It's hardwired into me. The Brit in me wants to say Roberto Martinez every single time. Yeah, I presume that's some sort of like package deal, a Netflix show, yes, or something like that. That the two of them just traveling around, destroying national teams one by one.
Next, please. I haven't been formally introduced yet. Blah, 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 blah. Formalities, whatever. Graham, I love this. I assume you saw this tweet. Hello. It's from Matt Sandra. I said it right one of those times, I'm hoping, who said, bold move by Portugal going from at Josie Lowry's least favorite international manager to at Graham Ruthven's favorite international manager. That brought me great joy last week when Matt sent that in.
That voice you just heard is Mr. Joe Lowry. Joe, would that also be a thumbs up moment for you, Bobby Martinez to Portugal?
Big thumbs up. I am very thankful that that is not the name that U.S. Soccer seems to be calling to try to get in. Maybe they did call him, but we just don't know about it. We don't know what the deal is there. But we do know that U.S. Soccer, at least according to reports, tried to contact Zinedine Zidane and were politely told,
"Tried to.
That's all right. We'll look other places in Zidane's camp." So, you know, at least U.S. Soccer is out here doing its due diligence, I guess. Is that a thumbs up? I think it's a thumbs up.
It's a confusing time for U.S. soccer. I'm sure we'll talk about that again later in the week. For now, Joe, so the Bobby Martinez news is exciting. The Zidane link was briefly exciting until it was not to be. But I also understand you've got some exciting news about Backfield.
Yes, I do. I'm going to stump for just a second here. So Backfield.com is a website that I helped start last year in May to cover basically all things American soccer. And we did that. We published a bunch of stuff. And now we're taking the next step, and we're pretty darn excited about it. So people can now subscribe to Backheel to read and support our independent American soccer coverage, which we do believe is a really big step for us. We published literally hundreds of things last year. I think it was over 300 articles from May to December about the U.S. national teams and MLS and the NWSL and a bunch of other stuff. We're looking forward to doing more of that this year in 2023, and we would love for folks to subscribe and to join us. We're small, we're independent, but we're committed to doing this and doing it well and to serving soccer in the U.S. We also have stickers, so if people want stickers, we have stickers.
Hey.
We can offer other things besides stickers, I promise, but good soccer coverage, stickers, and people that really love the game, that's what we're about, and we're excited about this next step.
Joe really has done a great job with Backfield. I'm not on commission, for anyone wondering. Joe, that can follow later.
Send me
that Venmo.
You said 15%, right? That's what we said.
Of course, yeah, at least, actually. But there has been, I find myself reading loads on Backfield over the last year. Just yesterday, I was kind of wondering what was happening in MLS. I've taken my finger off that pulse, just with it being the off-season, and there's an article there on the five most interesting moves, and Wilfred Nancy going to Columbus Crew, and Evander going to Portland Timbers, and so that kind of, I feel a little bit more caught up now, and I think we're maybe going to talk a little bit more MLS on the show this week, so I'll certainly be more caught up after that. But yeah, really good job by Joe, so if you could support him, I would encourage you to do that. He's worth it.
I just included Evander in there because I know how much Taylor likes the name. That's the only reason. Portland paid like $85,000,000 for him. That's why he's in there. But also because Taylor loves him.
I appreciate that, Joe Lowry. I still don't understand how either one of you sleeps. I spent time with you all. You both are just constantly hustling, constantly working. Is there any free time, or is it like you all like just need to recharge for like 15 minutes every evening and then you're good to go?
It's just batteries. Well, at least that's how I do it.
Yeah. I spent the weekend rigging my house like Kevin McAllister and doing vigilante patrols of where I live because we had more break-ins over the weekend, so that was good. I also watched Ferris Bueller over the weekend, so that wasn't a soccer thing. I need one of those dogs that chases the school principal out of the house. That's what I need.
Graham just casually mentioning that there's a crime spree happening in his neighborhood. Any updates there, Graham? How's the vigilante justice going?
My Brooklyn Basher baseball bat arrived today. So that's fun. Yeah, hopefully that doesn't need to get used anytime soon. No baseballs.
The bat is back. The bat is back, baby.
I mean, we should make light of this, but is it really a Brooklyn Basher? Is that just
that's
because
the name
you spent
of it,
time
yeah.
in Brooklyn? Is that what's happening here?
Yeah, I mean, they named it after Ryan's alter ego when we were covering the World Cup.
The Brooklyn Basher. Oh, boy. I'm just going to move us on to talk about Spain. Let's get away from everything we've been talking about. Let's talk Spain. Specifically, let's start with Atletico Madrid 0, Barcelona 1. Barcelona now top of La Liga, 3 points ahead of Real Madrid, 9 ahead of Sociedad in third. Graham, were you more impressed with Barcelona in the opening 25 minutes when they went ahead, or the second half of the game when they somehow managed to keep Atleti out?
I guess I was more impressed with how they started the match when they were the more proactive of the two teams. I enjoyed how Xavi kind of retooled this Barcelona side. So he had to try something a bit different because of the suspension to Robert Lewandowski. So it was always likely to be a bit more fluid from Barca in the attack. And I guess it's a thumbs up to how he got around that problem. They basically played without a centre forward for much of this match. The touch maps at halftime showed that Ansu was pretty much as deep as any of the midfielders in this Barcelona team. And I think that was by design because Barca had Ousmane Dembele high in the right side as the outlet. But it was all very tight and they had the control in the middle. And they didn't have Lewandowski as that focal point. So as I say, by design, it worked to a certain extent. Obviously, that's how they get the goal when basically there's the overload from Pedri basically taking things into his own hands. Yeah. So thumbs up to him for doing that. He just kind of drives at the Atletico Madrid box with the ball, and then the overload's created. He spreads out to Gavi and then ultimately to Dembele. And I think that was pretty much the plan from Barcelona, was to create that space for Ousmane Dembele out on the right side. Maybe it was a little bit one-dimensional at times. It felt like Atletico Madrid got a grip of things as the match went on, certainly after they made some changes to their team, which we can talk a little bit more about. But Barcelona did what they needed to do. They saw out the game at the end, a little bit of pressure from Atletico Madrid. They are a better team with Lewandowski, which I know is unsurprising given that Robert Lewandowski is one of the best strikers of his generation. So I'll be pleased to see him back in this team. But it was encouraging from a Barcelona point of view to know that they can do something else when he is missing.
Especially in the context of the title race, which is very real. Barcelona have a 3-point edge right now. But if we're thinking about differentiating factors, I didn't really think this performance was all that good from Barcelona. I thought they were strong early on, but they faded pretty aggressively after that, and Atleti had more and better chances in this game, even though they didn't have as much of the ball. But I liked how Xavi threw out a different look. Not that we haven't seen this 3-4-3 shape at other times this year, but it's a reminder of the fact that Barcelona do have, thanks to the 87 levers they pulled, some squad flexibility that isn't just playing Marcos Alonso as a left-sided center back in a back four. They come out, and Graham, you said it, right, in this shape with Dembele all the way wide on the right. That's been a theme this season, but they're in this 3-4-3 where it's Jules Koundé as the right center back, right back hybrid, and then it's Alex Balde high and wide on the left side, and then you've got Pedri and Gavi flanking Ansu Fati, and then you have Frankie de Jong and Sergio Busquets as the midfield too. So there's your 3-4-3, Pedri and Gavi in the half spaces, the midfield anchors behind them, the back three, the wide presence, and then Fati as the number nine. I liked the look. It didn't really come off fully for me in this game. I didn't think Barcelona were fully coherent in that shape. But either being able to adjust and get 3 points without Robert Lewandowski, that deserves a thumbs up, or being able to show a different look that gets different players on the field, because let's not forget, in that base 4-3-3 shape, you can't really get all four of those central midfielders on the field together. It's really, really hard to do that unless you're going to play somebody fully out of position or just change the structure of that shape. This way, Xavi did get De Jong and Busquets and Gavi and Pedri on the field together, and that helps with fitness, it helps with rotation, it helps with managing all of that stuff headed into the last half of the season.
Graham, if Pedri did what he did to set up this goal in like FIFA the video game, it's the type of thing that would have had me like smash a controller for being like, ah, the game's glitching. Like, why is everyone running away from him? Graham, with that in mind, how angry do you think Diego Simeone was with that defending? Because suddenly there was sort of a parting of the seas, a pretty large gap for Pedri to attack.
Oh, absolutely furious. Even more furious than normal for Diego Simeone. And that has been a common theme with this Atletico Madrid team. You look at the best Atleti teams under Simeone, they obviously have that defensive basis. They not even just in terms of their tactical setup, but their spirit and how they dive into tackles. And I don't really get that sense from this Atletico Madrid team. That has been the case for a couple years. And even when they won the Spanish title a couple seasons ago, it didn't feel like they had that basis. It felt like Simeone had kind of gone a little bit more expansive in the way he set up this team. So, yes, he would be absolutely furious. But to be honest, but at this point, he should be used to those sort of defensive lapses from Atletico Madrid. I mean, it was brilliant from Pedri as well. We shouldn't downplay how good it was. And I couldn't help contrasting that sort of action from him and how we didn't really see anything like that from him at the World Cup for Spain. As good as he was in possession, I think under Luis Enrique, there was more of a fear of giving the ball away. There was an instance in Qatar where Aimer Laporte actually apologised to Lucho for playing a successful long pass. It was a completed pass, and he actually holds up his hand to Lucho on the sidelines because clearly he didn't want that sort of thing. So in that sort of environment, you don't have Pedri driving at opponents and dribbling. And obviously, Xavi also likes this Barcelona team to keep hold of possession. There's a lot of overlap between the two approaches. But it does feel like Xavi maybe has a healthier balance where players like Pedri are still emboldened to try and take players on. Obviously, we see it with Dembele all the time. Messi didn't play under Xavi, but Barcelona have a history of emboldening players like that. So I think Barcelona Pedri is the best version of Pedri over the Spain version, and we saw that in this game.
We also saw Atleti fail to score, not look as competent in the attack, at least in the first half. And Joe, I'm going to assume that, again, Diego Simeone not thrilled with this one. I felt like this was Barcelona doing some smart things because there's João Félix up top, because there's Antoine Griezmann up top. I felt like they front and followed Félix really well, and they tracked Griezmann especially well, so that they never really had that much time. They never really had that much ability to combine or get that much going, at least in the first half. That sort of partnership, I think, can be explosive, Griezmann and Felix, but I'm not sure it can be explosive and functional at the same time with this Atleti team.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I don't, on paper, I don't love the combination of those players. And like I said earlier, though, I thought Atleti were at times the better team in this game. I think they're a little hard done by. They created more. I think a lot of stuff worked. A lot of it, though, just doesn't feel good because they lose this game. And this is a massive game for Atleti, who are fifth in the table, and they're, what, 14 points back of Barcelona? Like, their title challenge, if there ever was one, is pretty much over at this point. So in terms of a long-term solution, or even in terms of something that maybe gets you back into something this season up into the Champions League spots, which I expect Atleti will get to, you know, maybe Griezmann and Felix is not the front two you're looking for, because Felix doesn't seem to be in any sort of short, medium, or long-term plans for Diego Simeone right now. And profile-wise, as Graham is keen to point out, he's not a back-to-goal number nine, right? He's somebody who's going to drop in and create and play make. He's much more of a number 10 than he is a striker, as is Antoine Griezmann. That's kind of why he didn't work at Barcelona, because they didn't really need him to do that role. So he comes back to Atleti, and he can be very good in that job. We saw that with France at the World Cup. He can be elite at that stuff. But something about the balance there and the other personnel for Atleti combined with them having to fight back for a goal, which is not really in their DNA, it just wasn't their day. And so I guess a thumbs down, but maybe a thumbs like angled halfway down, 45 degrees down, because I do think there was some nice stuff from Atleti in this match. Yeah. It just didn't come off.
After the World Cup, and I think I spoke about this while the tournament was happening, my hope was that Simeone would have seen some of that tournament and seen how Griezmann was a revelation for France and how well Felix played for Portugal and the positions that those two players were playing in and how that differs to where they'd been playing for Atletico Madrid, I'd hope that he would do something with that information. But on the basis of this match, it doesn't really seem like he's learned anything. There were just large periods of the match where Felix and Griezmann weren't on the ball at all, particularly in the first half. Griezmann, because this is what he is like as a player, he does a good job of pressing and closing down. So there was still that element, that side of his game in this match. But we saw at the World Cup just how good he is at breaking the lines in possession. Yeah. And Atleti don't get any of that from Griezmann. And they get even less out of Yao Felix, who just needs to get out of that club. I'm not convinced that they can play Felix and Griezmann in the same team, because I would have them deeper as part of that midfield three, as we saw at the World Cup. I know Felix maybe has a little bit more freedom to go, slightly more attacking and more central. But nonetheless, it doesn't seem like there's any chemistry between the two of them. And it wasn't until Simeone got an actual focal point on the pitch in the form of Alvaro Morata that Atleti started to pose any sort of threat. And that was combined with Griezmann kind of being pushed out to the left side. So that's maybe where he's a little bit more effective than in this false nine. I don't even know what I'd describe his position. Just anonymous, to be honest, on the ball for Atleti when he's played through the middle like that. So Atletico Madrid actually have a really strong group of forwards, but Simeone just continues to mismanage them really, really badly.
Well, Barcelona having a slightly better time of things than Atleti with that 1-0 win. We're going to get back to talk about Real Madrid's loss in just a second. First, let's take a break. Then we'll get back with some more La Liga.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Today's episode is brought to you by our old friends, Mack Weldon. Wouldn't it be nice if we could have things both ways, like a zero-calorie cheeseburger, internet ads in March that weren't just reminders to do your taxes, a dog that never needs walking after midnight when it's cold, a Manchester United that is consistently good instead of their current scattershot approach? Well, we tend to think of clothing as an either-or situation as well. People think looking sharp means starchy Oxfords and stiff chinos rather than effortless comfort. But it's possible to have it both ways. Mack Weldon makes timeless apparel with modern performance fabrics for guys who want to look and feel sharp without sacrificing comfort. From their light-as-air underwear to innovative anti-odor tees and versatile yet comfortable pants, Mack Weldon has a full range of clothes that never go out of style. I got a few things recently, including a long-sleeve polo, which I love, maybe the most comfortable t-shirt, which I also love, and my new favorite sweatpants, the Ace sweatpant. It's exactly what I described above, comfort and versatile, but still stylish. It's the type of sweatpant I can wear to pick up my kids from daycare and not think, I'm now wearing sweatpants in public. The other parents will judge me. Now I just think, judge away, nerds, because you will never be this comfortable unless you're also wearing a pair, in which case, high five. Mack Weldon is not flashy. It's just classic, always in style, and made from the world's most comfortable performance materials. They're designed to fit both your style and the demands of modern life. So get timeless looks with modern comfort from Mack Weldon. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code TSS. That's MackWeldon.com, promo code TSS to get 20% off your first order. Thank you to Mack Weldon for sponsoring today's episode. Welcome back. As I said in the intro, Barca 3 points ahead of Real Madrid, who suffered a 2-1 loss to Villarreal, specifically a Villarreal team with whom Joe is now in like. Joe, it's not quite yet love, as I understand it, but we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, I mean, we're still feeling things out. We're texting, we're calling a little. It's more FaceTimes, late night FaceTimes than anything else. But, you know, we're doing the classic steps that you have now in modern relationships. I mean, no, really, this love started last year. Let's not forget, in the Champions League, as they made that run. Now the managers are different.
Yeah, I forget
now,
it's
right?
been that long. It's
I know,
long
doesn't it? It feels like
wow,
forever.
Okay.
It feels like forever that started. But it went from Unai Emery, who I thought did wonders with them last year, to Quique Setien, who I kind of forgot existed, to be entirely honest. I'm really sorry.
It's a passionate love affair right there.
It is. We're getting there. Now it's Quique Setien. And this team was just fun, right? They have a lot of the same identity that we saw in the Champions League last year. But then they were also, you know, more pragmatic in the league. They didn't have, or they're more pragmatic, excuse me, at times based on the competition and based on the opponent. This year, they're that as well, but they're just fun to watch. The collection of players that beats Real Madrid gets a hearty thumbs up for me in this match. Danny Parejo is in midfield, and he is just so fun to watch as sort of a number six who can also burst forward. He's key, I believe, for their first goal in this game, stepping up in midfield. I mean, there's just so much good stuff with this team. There's so much fun to watch. Thumbs down to Real Madrid, who lose an important game. Every single match for them as they're in this title race with Barcelona is critical. And they were level on points coming into this weekend. They lose this week. Barcelona win. Barcelona now 3 points up. Villarreal's first goal in this match comes in the 47th minute. It's a mistake from Real Madrid in their buildup. And Villarreal pounce on it and score like two or three passes later. It's a great counterattacking sequence. But it is poor from Real Madrid, and those are the moments that can come back and really kill you. Benzema gets a penalty back, and it's a weekend, so Benzema scored. Taylor, as you said last week, you're so right about that. And then Villarreal get a penalty of their own after a David Alaba handball. Just mistakes really hurt Madrid in this game. The fact that Villarreal is no pushover. They are high up the table this year. I just lost the table on my phone. Here we go. They're sixth. So they're still in European places right now. They're going to make a push, and I really wouldn't bet against Villarreal ending up sort of either where they are now or higher, but I don't expect them to fall.
We got a title race, Joe. I did not necessarily see this coming. It felt like for a while maybe this is going to be Real Madrid's season to kind of run away with it. But instead, 3 points is all that separates. We might get one.
Yeah, my both of my thumbs. And can I do my big toes up as well? I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
I'm going to do all four. All four are up for just the title race and general chaos that we're seeing in Real Madrid and in La Liga right now. So Barcelona got La Hosed last weekend and drew with Espanyol. Now Madrid come in and lose to Villarreal. And now it sounds like, according to reports, I love how this is reported on. It's not Lajos coming out and saying it himself. He's big enough that somebody has to report this stuff and leak it. It sounds like this is Matthew Lajos's final season. And thank you to the Discord.
It's true.
I know. I hope it's not. My fingers are crossed that it's not. Thank you to the Discord who was kind enough to put this to my attention, to bring this to my attention, and to offer their condolences. I appreciate all of that. But if this is well and truly his final season...
Oh, hey, Joe. Then, sorry to interrupt. I just wanted you to know, for expressing premature condolences, you were just yellow carded by Matthew Lajos. Just so you
perfect.
Know. That is
bring
how he
it.
Operates.
Bring yeah, it, Matthew. Red me. Yeah. Do it. As I walk off the field, I'm going to yell and scream. But, I mean, if this is his final season... This is how it has to go. It has to be a chaotic title race. It has to be all these other chaotic elements sprinkled in along the way. This La Liga season and Matthew Lajos's refereeing career cannot end another way.
Well said. Well, if he does need more chaos, we can just send him on over to England. We had an FA Cup weekend in England. Manchester United, big Frank Lampard's unpleasant situation in Everton, even less pleasant, with United getting a 3-0 win on Friday. Championship clubs got themselves some wins, with Burnley eliminating Bournemouth, Blackpool besting Nottingham Forest and Sheffield Wednesday, getting past Newcastle. Graham, can you take us through some of your favorite or more notable results from this weekend in the FA Cup?
Yeah, so thumbs up to another FA Cup third round weekend that, as you say, produced a number of classic upsets. I have to say, personally, my interest wanes a little bit as a neutral when it's FA Cup weekend. I love match of the day on FA Cup weekend. It's all condensed. It is, you know, a shot in the arm of the magic of the cup. Watching the games live, I have to say, they're I kind of passed on a couple of them. But nonetheless, I enjoy the news headlines from FA Cup weekend. So maybe the biggest one was at Villa Park, where League Two Stevenage scored 2 goals in 2 minutes late on to beat Aston Villa 2-1. And if you're going to pull off an upset, that is how you do it. And to be honest, Aston Villa, watching the highlights of this game, I didn't watch it live because Chelsea City was on at the same time. But Villa, it seemed like they got what they deserved. They should have killed the game earlier, and Stevenage grew into it. As a Scot, really weird to see all these Scottish players playing for Stevenage, or players who played in our league that I had completely forgotten about. Dean Campbell's on loan. He's the player who scores the winner. He's on loan from Aberdeen, so that was a little bit strange. Then you had, you referenced it quickly, Sheffield Wednesday beating Newcastle United. I'm not sure how bothered Newcastle United were about the FA Cup, given what they've got going on in the league. And that's the thing about the FA Cup. Sometimes you get the sense that some of the bigger teams, or not even the bigger teams, the teams that have more to focus on in the league, whether that's a relegation battle or going for a top four place, maybe they're not all that bothered about the competition. I think maybe Newcastle United were in in that category. But nonetheless, they were pretty poor against Sheffield Wednesday. They lost 2-1. They looked pretty defensively vulnerable. Josh Windass, I don't know what's happened with all the players who went to England from Scotland. Josh Windass played for Rangers, scored 2 goals, turned into Kylian Mbappe in this game. There were, to be sincere about it for a moment, there were some really worrying reports after this match of poor stewarding and fears of crushing among the Liverpool fans at the Leppings Lane end of Hillsborough, which I'm sure I don't need to go into too much depth to explain why that's so triggering. So hopefully we don't ever see anything like that again. I know some Newcastle United fans were very concerned about that situation. But looking at the football, Wednesday deserved their win. And then we have to mention America's favourite team that isn't Fulham, Leeds United. It looked like they were going out of the cup for 93 minutes on Saturday. They were 2-0 down against Cardiff, who were kind of tearing them apart in the first half. And then it was a 93rd minute equaliser from Leeds United to secure a replay in that game. No Tyler Adams for Leeds United in this match, and you could tell because Leeds were just far too open through the middle, and that is what happens when you rest Tyler Adams. This is what you get.
Graham, America's favourite team that isn't Fulham or Leeds sounds like it could be a tagline for the next season of Welcome to Wrexham. How was their weekend?
Oh, yeah, wow. So thumbs up to Robin Ryan getting an easy episode for season 2 of Welcome to Wrexham, because this was a wild match. So Wrexham, who are still in the National League, sorry for any spoilers there for people who haven't watched season 1, but this is real life, people. I don't know if they count as spoilers, but they went away to Coventry City of the Championship, and they won 4-3, which is quite an incredible result. They were 4-1 up in this match, and it looked like it was going to be a thumping of Coventry City. They did make things a little bit difficult for themselves by being pegged back to 4-3, but they got over the line, and I look forward to hearing the grumpy pub owner's thoughts on this match on Hulu later this year.
Graham, before we get to the big results from this FA Cup, I would say, I do think we should do some thumbs down. We should do some naming and shaming. What was the match that made you like especially think maybe I don't need to watch that one? Was it Derby Barnsley, or was there another contender?
So Tottenham Portsmouth on Saturday afternoon. I wasn't aware that had happened until I went through the results, and that was a TV game as well, so that really did not register on my radar at all. Yeah, I've got a strange relationship with the FA Cup. If it's Stirling Albion in the Scottish Cup and we get a draw against a bigger team, I mean, I was giving you updates in Brooklyn of us against Inverness, so as a fan I love it. I can understand why lower league teams, it means so much to them. But as a neutral and evaluating it as a TV event, a live TV event, I don't know. It doesn't really register with me until the latter rounds.
So what I'm hearing is that Graham just wants to watch like the Super League or something equivalent to that. No bad teams, all high quality games. Is that,
on TikTok,
Graham, is that what you're saying? Yeah,
on TikTok as well.
Yeah, I would say the big result I alluded to earlier would be Manchester City 4-0. Joe, if the question were how good is Manchester City without Haaland, De Bruyne, Gundogan, Stones, Ake, and Ederson, it seems the answer is still pretty good.
Yeah, the answer is just yes. So thumbs up to Man City for how crazy deep they are. This is one of those other things that maybe I forgot slightly during the World Cup, especially because the big storyline, it was and still is, Arsenal's title challenge in England. That is the predominant on-field storyline, and it should be, right? Because Arsenal are still ahead in the Premier League table, and that is something that I certainly didn't expect coming into this year. But still, I mean, up to Man City, up to Riyad Mahrez, who is one of the members of that sort of depth squad. He's been a spot starter for Pep this year. He scored 3 goals in 2 games against Chelsea this week. So City beat Chelsea in the Premier League earlier this week, or I guess last week now it would be, and then they beat them 4-0 in the FA Cup on the weekend. And Riyad Mahrez is sitting there with 3 goals, just some lovely moments from him. He has a penalty in this game in the FA Cup. He also scores that first one's a free kick, if I'm remembering correctly. I have the three goals now confused in my head. But it's a lovely free kick with his left foot. I mean, he was brilliant, I thought, over these 2 games. And City in general, just really, really, really good. Chelsea, thumbs down to them because they are in a bit of a death spiral right now. Can't get results in the league, can't get results in the cup. Graham Potter is in a very difficult situation. You have Pep Guardiola after matches, you know, giving a comment and saying, you know, if I could tell anything to Todd Boehly, I would say give him time. Graham Potter is going to be saying the same thing, because I can understand people talking about bringing out the sack for Graham Potter right now because of how bad the results have been. I don't know that I have a hard and fast opinion on what Chelsea should do, but I have a hard and fast opinion on how good City are right now. And the answer is just yes, they are really, really, really good.
did Guardiola do that thing? Whenever Guardiola is asked about a player who is in poor form or a manager who is maybe looks like he might get the sack, he does that thing of going way too far in his praise, where
they're
he'll
the
be
best
like,
manager ever.
Graham Potter is the best manager in the history of soccer. Like, he does that all the time.
But with the low, like the low rumble as well, they're like, Graham Potter is the best manager we've ever seen. Like, it's a very unbroken eye contact sort of endorsement.
Yeah. It was like when he was asked about Calvin Phillips and his weight, and he was like, Calvin Phillips is the sexiest man alive. Okay, Pep.
Pep doesn't know how to just like split the middle. He can only go to one side or to the other.
It's all about absolutes. So Pep was maybe still inclined to sing Potter's praises, Graham. The Chelsea faithful less so. We had some singing for Tuchel. We had some singing for Abramovich, according to reports. Seems like things aren't great with Chelsea right now.
No, they are in a difficult position right now, and it's thumbs down to... Let's start off with Graham Potter, who I am starting to get a little bit worried about, because this is not going well. Chelsea have won just one of their last seven matches. That decent start that they had under Potter, which is another thing that just confuses me even further, was the part you would expect to be most difficult seemed to go easiest for Potter at Chelsea, which is his first few matches where he's thrown in and he has about four games in the space of 2 weeks. Chelsea won, I think, three of those games and drew one, and that seems like a long time ago now. He is struggling for answers. This is a serious slump that Chelsea are in. At the moment, you can feel the exasperation coming through him. There's a moment where Kai Havertz, for the penalty kick, the Man City penalty kick, where essentially Kai Havertz, for no real reason, punches, Superman punches the ball away, and Potter is watching that on the screen he has on the bench, and without saying exactly what he says, you can see him mouth, me. And kind of turning away in exasperation at basically his players making stupid decisions and doing silly things. And there was a lot of that in this match. For Chelsea, they are nowhere near Man City's level, which you might think, of course they're not. But loads of people thought Chelsea would be at that level last season. Remember the whole Lukaku is the final piece of the puzzle argument? They won the Champions League by beating City in a final a season and a half ago. And I think the problem, Potter, you can't clearly just pin everything on Potter. I think injuries haven't helped, and Pulisic is the latest player sidelined for Chelsea at the moment. I think some of Potter's decisions have been a little bit scrambled. He changes from a back four to a back three in this match. Chelsea finished this game with a front three of Dacho Fofana, who's a player Chelsea have only just signed. I'm not particularly familiar with him. Omari Hutchinson and Chukwuemeka, who they signed from Aston Villa. You can tell all those players that I am very familiar with all those guys, which for Chelsea to have that front line is quite astonishing in a game away to Man City, and maybe using the kids as the way to go in the long term. But it really feels like Potter is scrambling around for solutions right now. But the bigger issue is this club has no idea what it wants to be at this moment. There's so much happening at Chelsea. They've got a new manager, and they're signing a new defence in the summer, and loads of young players, and then they're going for Enzo Fernandez, and all of a sudden they're going for Mudryk, and Cuckoo is coming in the summer, and it just feels like they're throwing a lot of stuff at the wall in the hope that something will stick, and Potter has found himself in the middle of all of this. So while some of his decisions I don't think have been perfect, injuries are a factor, I think Chelsea have a bit of an identity crisis at the moment. That's the real story with Chelsea.
Speaking of identities, Graham, when you get together with Graham Potter at the international Graham meetings that you all attend, where obviously rule number one is pronounce the name properly, do you pick him up? Like, are you trying to cheer him up, or is it more of a you are doing a disservice to our name, get better?
The latter feels
that's what I felt like
more,
it was
more appropriate.
Be.
Yeah, come on, Graham. You're shaming all Grahams, and then Stephen Graham, the actor alongside me, is weighing in. Get your act together, Graham Lasso. Yeah, come on, Graham Potter.
I'm glad I've taken this down this road. This game was pretty revealing to me, and obviously there are some, like as I said, there's plenty of players rested. There's a lot of rotation in this one, but still, just how good Manchester City looked in so many different ways. They looked comfortable on the ball in 1v1 matchups. They looked really good with off-the-ball runs to find little bits of space. Even you mentioned him earlier for Spain, Graham, but Aymeric Laporte in this one has a couple different balls over the top where he kind of carries it forward and then has little chipped balls in behind or into gaps. And I think just the variety of the way City are able to attack even without some of their star players was especially impressive to me.
Yeah, and you can see a well-coached team there. I should also mention just the players, and Joe kind of referenced this, but the players that City are able to rotate into their team is ridiculous. I mean, Julian Alvarez is the rotation option for Manchester City. Calvin Phillips, who I know there's been some debate around his fitness and so on, but nonetheless,
He's the sexiest man of the world.
Sexiest man of the world, and England international, Calvin Phillips. So to bring him into that midfield is not a massive, massive drop-off. Who else comes into this midfield? I can't quite remember, but the City squad at the moment is just ridiculously deep. And you compare that to Chelsea at the moment, playing all those kids and all those names that I mentioned that I pronounce very badly, and then youngsters like Lewis Hall at left back at the moment. And part of that is down to injuries, part of that is just down to poor squad construction at Stamford Bridge at the moment. It really does feel like they need to straighten things out. Yeah. And I don't think it's until that happens that we can judge Potter. I'm not about to revise everything that we said about Graham Potter earlier in the season. He is a very good coach. I think if he gets the right tools and he's given time, he will turn things around at Chelsea. But I have less faith in Todd Boehly, frankly, than I do in Graham Potter. So I don't think it's a guarantee that this ends well for him at Chelsea. And that's why I say I'm a little bit worried about him, particularly while Luis Enrique is sitting there without a job, itching to get back into club football, and that feels like it might actually be a good fit for this Chelsea team, and they've had interest in the past, so I am concerned for him.
I think that's fair. I think watching this game, it was just a night and day, especially with the second and third goals for City, because that third goal, I think it's 18 passes, it's after pressing and winning the ball off of Kovacic, so he's trying to carry it out, but there's really good like movement of the ball to try to probe for space. Then Kyle Walker has a really nice run in between the lines. It's like a 40-yard sprint. He cuts it back for Foden. It's a lovely goal.
Is this the third goal?
Yeah.
Yeah. And the most Pep Guardiola goal of all time.
Yes, absolutely. And then just contrasting that with the one you mentioned earlier, Graham, the penalty where it's just Kai Havertz like, handball? I punched ball away? That legal? Like it was a telling difference in the quality or the alertness of these two teams in this game. So, thumbs up to Man City. Commiserative thumbs down to Chelsea. We'll see how things play out. We will also take a quick break, get back with the rest of the FA Cup and a few more games, including a potential happy, happy, happy season in Italy. We'll see how that goes in just a moment. Today's episode is brought to you by Shopify. On the Total Soccer Show, we often talk about the importance of a manager who can clearly and effectively communicate their tactics and then a squad of players capable of executing that approach, but also adding some individual flair along the way. And that's the same relationship you're getting with Shopify. You tell them how you want things to work or what you need to get done, and they execute the game plan, sometimes even better than you could have expected, with Shopify Magic, their AI-powered all-star. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage to the first real store stage, all the way to the did we just hit over a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. From what I've heard from family members who use Shopify for their online store, which has evolved into an amazing brick-and-mortar location, Shopify has helped with that growth, and with every step along the way, they've made it easier to process and track orders, run the business day-to-day, and help with long-term growth as well. So whether you're auctioning autographed jerseys or selling custom stadium prints, both of which are awesome, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% compared to other leading commerce platforms. And you can sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, the aforementioned AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States and is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, their extensive help resources are there to support your success every step of the way, because businesses that grow Grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial at shopify.com/TSS. That's all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/TSS now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. One more time, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/TSS.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Welcome back. One more game to discuss from the FA Cup. Liverpool 2, Wolves 2. Darwin Núñez scoring goals. Joe Lowry, it's happening. It's really happening.
You know, I can't believe it's happened. It's almost like he scored 9 goals already this season, and this was his 10th goal.
That's not the narrative, Joe.
Yeah, so this is a funny bit right here in all of this, right? So Darwin Núñez has been missing a bunch of chances. He's missed a lot of moments this season. I joked about one that he hits off the post last week, which I'm so glad he did, because that brought us one of the greatest own goals that my eyes have ever seen against Leicester. Darwin Núñez hasn't been coming up big in every moment, but I do think the narrative is a little bit overblown about Darwin Núñez not being able to find the back of the net. He had 9 goals in all competitions coming into this game, which is an extremely respectable tally for halfway through the season. It puts you basically on pace for 20, if not more than 20, given all the different competitions Liverpool are in by the end of the year. I think if you offer Liverpool fans 20-plus goals from Darwin Núñez this year, they'll take it every single time. Just, we like to complain about stuff, so nobody's happy with how you get there. But you're right, Graham, it's not the narrative. Darwin Núñez needs to be better. That he's bad at. I can't do this. Graham, rescue me.
I mean, he's good. I like him. So when I'm criticizing him, it's largely in jest. But yeah, I think it's just because the two matches that he played against, I can't even remember who they were against. But the two matches he played after the World Cup, I think his expected goals value was something like 3.5. It was the highest of any player in the Premier League for those two games. And for him not to score in those two games was quite remarkable. Sure. There were a couple of really good opportunities in there. So I think that's why you had the narrative, just because it's almost like the season has started all over again. And you think about how at the start of the season, narratives build very quickly. We've kind of had two of those windows this season. And I think that's what happened with Darwin Núñez. But thumbs up to this particular finish, which was fantastic. So the diagonal ball was played over the top by, I think it's Alexander Arnold. It seems like a very TAA ball for him to play.
No, but he's bad too. Don't forget.
Of course, yeah. Mm-hmm. Everyone's bad. Yep. Yeah. All the players you think are good are actually bad.
That's right.
It's the upside down.
Unless they're named Graham.
It's a great ball by Alexander Arnold. Straight into the run of Núñez. He doesn't need to break his stride, and then he kind of guides it back across goal on the volley. It might have come off his shin, but we won't mention that. It was a nice finish, and once again, he was a nuisance to the opposition. He gets in behind. I think Liverpool are a more dangerous team when he's involved. It was a front three from Liverpool of Gakpo on the left, and then you had Salah and Núñez. But Gakpo was dropping deep into the midfield to drop the ball forward, as we expected he might. So it was a front two for much of the match, which isn't much of a departure from what Liverpool had been doing before Gakpo's signing. And it very much felt like he was eased into this team in this match. I think we'll see more of an overt influence from him in matches going forward. But yeah, Núñez, I'm a fan of Núñez. And we spoke about Darwin Núñez, Taylor. The worst case scenario is that he's Alvaro Morata, and the best case scenario is that he's Edison Cavani, and he was more like the latter in this match.
So we did have some narrative in this one. Núñez scores, Gakpo eased in, goalkeepers not doing well, all sidelines continuing to be confusing, Graham.
Wow. Yeah, so thumbs down to whoever installed the VAR cameras at Anfield for this match, because yeah. Why would you need to see the whole pitch? It's just unreasonably high expectations.
Can you explain what happened for people who didn't see this one? Because it's a weird one. It's an odd one. We get one of these every couple years where it's like, what about that guy? It's like, oh yeah, we just didn't count him. Don't worry about him.
Yeah. So Basically, Wolves, it's 2-2. Wolves have a corner. The corner is partially cleared back to, I believe, the taker of the original corner. The ball goes back in, it bounces around a bit, and then Totti, not that one, another Totti, finishes from close range for Wolves. When the second ball comes in, Totti is clearly onside, so very quickly there's an element of confusion there because the TV pictures are freezing that moment. He's about 3 yards onside, so clearly that's not the issue. And then basically, it emerged that the Wolves' goal didn't count because they didn't have the VAR angle to see where the corner kick taker was by the time the ball comes out to him. So there's a Wolves' touch when it comes out to him. So basically the linesman adjudged that the taker of the corner kick was the person who was offside, but there was no VAR angle to validate that. And Julian Lopetegui loses his mind in this match because Wolves have a tactical camera in this match. That is very common for Premier League teams to install their own cameras. They then use the footage to analyse after the game. And so Wolves' camera did apparently catch, I've seen a picture of it, it did catch this angle, and he was onside. You can quite clearly see that the corner kick taker is onside when the ball comes back to him. So Wolves' winner at Anfield should have counted. It was the ghost goal at Anfield. It's just quite remarkable that at this sort of level, Liverpool, one of the biggest clubs in the world, these are two Premier League teams. I know it's not the FA Cup, but nonetheless,
Magic
to have
Cup.
A pitch not covered by VAR cameras is insane.
It's the magic, Graham. It's the magic of the cup. You got to have that the drama magic of the in cup. There. Any other notes from this one before we move to the continent?
Just that Matthias Nunes was very good in central midfield for Liverpool, so thumbs up to him. Liverpool have been linked with him. Apparently, he might be going in the summer. He was everything that Liverpool need in central midfield, driving the ball forward. He completed as many take-ons as every other Liverpool player combined, so he's a very good player. I'm excited to see how Lopetegui gets more of him for the rest of the season, but looking long-term, it feels like his future might be at Liverpool, and they clearly or surely liked what they saw from him in this game.
We have talked about them needing some resupply in the midfield. Maybe it will be he. Maybe it will be he, but hopefully nobody takes anybody away from Napoli so that they can continue their title dream. Graham, it's possible. Let us all rejoice. 7 points ahead of Juventus and Milan. Dare we dream that this could be a reality?
I mean, I was already dreaming. Now I'm in a deep dream. So Napoli are back to being 7 points clear at the top of the Serie A table. For 85 minutes of this match between AC Milan and Roma on Sunday night, it felt like that was not going to happen because AC Milan had a 2-0 lead. They were cruising up to a certain point. And then Roma somehow managed to score twice, and Tammy Abraham snatches the 2-2 draw in stoppage time. And that is fantastic news for Napoli, who are, as I say, are back to being 7 points clear. And Juventus, who are somehow, amazingly, up to second place in the Serie A table. They have been on a winning run kind of under the radar a little bit. I'm not sure we have talked about what has changed for them. Maybe we will do that next weekend review, because it is Napoli-Juventus on Friday night. And that is a huge match in the Scudetto race. But yeah, it felt like AC Milan kind of threw this one away. They are still very much in the title race, but 7 points is back to being a pretty big gap between them and Napoli.
Joe, if the answer to what have Juve been doing correctly was play Weston McKennie on the wing, are you inclined to agree or disagree with that idea?
I just hate that reality. I just don't like this reality that we're living in where Weston McKennie does play on the wing. I'm not fully convinced that a lot of things have changed at Juventus. I still think there are massive issues with their squad. I think, obviously, they have been getting results recently, and so there is something to be said for that. But I still just don't love this team, and I'm not sure that they'll be able to hang. I could be totally wrong, and we'll replay this clip come May or June, whenever the season ends, and I'll sound silly. But I do know one thing for sure, and that's that I'm giving a hearty thumbs down to Max Allegri for using Weston McKennie on the wing in this game. You know, it's happened before, right? And I've been okay with it for a while leading up to the World Cup. You know, he's versatile. He's getting on the field. There's all of those reasons to at least appreciate that he's playing for a club like Juve, Weston McKennie. But I'm just ready for something different for him. I wonder if Weston McKennie is ready for something different. There are reports that both Aston Villa and Bournemouth are readying offers for Weston McKennie. Borussia Dortmund as well appears to be interested. The last report that I read, I don't know how accurate this is, says that McKennie would prefer Dortmund, so maybe he's gone from Schalke to Dortmund in a roundabout way. I don't know what's going to happen there. I don't know if he'll move in January, but I just want to see him play as a central midfielder. He's the most fun to watch there. Not that he's a perfect player, but I'm just ready to see Weston McKennie have more fun on the soccer field. And based off of what I saw from this game from Juve, despite the 1-0 win and the chances they created, I don't think anybody was having fun for Juventus over the weekend because it was an ugly game.
For some reason, I tend to find validity to transfer rumors when there is that strange disparity in clubs linked, because like Dortmund, Villa, and Bournemouth are it's a range. There's a range there, is what I'm saying. But whenever it's like AC Milan, Inter Milan, and Juve are all interested, it's like, okay, so somebody in Italy said there was an appeal. Like I think sometimes when they all feel a little bit same.
Yeah,
I'm not sure I'm inclined to believe it as much as when there is a seemingly random collection of clubs in for a player.
Because basically you're thinking, well, no one would ever come up with that.
Yeah, exactly. That's too odd. That's
so
too
random.
I imagine going to Bournemouth would be a strange one from Juve to Bournemouth. But, you know, stranger things have happened, and not trying to take shots there. Rafael Leão.
Bournemouth is the Turin of the south of England.
Of course it is. That's what I've always heard. Rafael Leão is still in Milan for the time being, involved in that 2-2 draw with Roma. Graham, where should Leão go next so that we can all enjoy him? And why is the answer Sterling Albion?
Well, is he getting in the team ahead of Kai Fotheringham?
Who's
staying? Not a chance.
He's staying by the end of the season.
This isn't even in the running order. You want to do like a tight 5 minutes on Kai Fotheringham staying and why that means something to you?
Of course I do. It's Kai Fotheringham.
Just tell me when you're done.
Kai Fotheringham is clearly a player. I've spoken about him in the pod, so I'll keep this short. Basically, yeah, he's been our best player this season. He was leaving, his 6-month loan deal was up from Dundee United, and then very unexpectedly on Friday, he has signed on until the end of the season. So I'll take Rafael Leão as a depth option for the Scottish Cup when we can rotate that team. But yeah, he's not getting in ahead of Fotheringham right
Graham,
now.
Graham says, unsurprisingly, the loan, you know, he's brought back, as if Graham didn't kidnap every single coach and scout that was there to look at him at the Sterling Albion game last weekend. Graham, I mean, come on, you told us you were sitting right next to those people. What do you want us to think? What are we supposed to think here? It's obvious.
Yeah, the sinister whispering campaign worked, yep. Taylor.
Clearly.
It did. He's problematic in the locker room. Yes.
He prefers Pro Evo over FIFA.
Oh, that unacceptable. What was the, Graham? Sincerely, like, what was the reaction? Was it just a quiet fist pump, or was there some cheering happening when he renewed?
So it was my friend that messaged me to say that it happened, and yeah, there was some fist pumping going on. But then
that
the match on Saturday
fake.
Was
that sounds fake. That sounds
Graham,
like
Graham's
happen.
Tweet. Graham's tweet was all caps. It was something like just yes in all caps with a bunch of S's. So I kind of believe
it was oh my god maybe 20 times in a row or something
that could
like
be
that.
It. That could be it.
Whereas Graham's tweet when his daughter was born was just there is a child. Period. That's it. All lowercase for that one. We've moved into the personal section of this show, Joe, have you got some thumbs for Georgi Mihailovic?
Yeah, I thought you were going to toss me something on Phoenix Rising, and I was like, I'm not fully up to date on their offseason moves at this point, so I don't have a lot to add.
Georgi Mihailovic, I feel like you stand a legend. You've been a fan, you've been a supporter for some time.
Yeah, I like Georgi, and I think he did some decent things this weekend. I do have my thumbs up for him, less for what he did on the field for AZ in their 1-1 draw with Vitesse, but more for the fact that he was on the field in the first place. So this was AZ's first Eredivisie game back after the break, I believe. So, you know, I think this is something of a sign that Georgi's coming in right from the jump. He's starting. He didn't play the full match, but he played 60-some-odd minutes in this game. Did some good things, linked a little bit as the most advanced central midfielder in a midfield three. He had some good touches. He also had some heavy touches, and that's why I say it's less for what we saw on the field. It kind of looked like Georgi was playing his first competitive game in months after moving from Montreal to the Netherlands, and Montreal's season ended, you know, a decent stretch before the World Cup started. So then you have that break, you have the World Cup break, and now you have finally games coming back thick and fast for AZ. But I like the fact that he was on the field. I think he will do very well in the Eredivisie. I believe that Mihailovic has pretty much all of the skills that he'll need to thrive there that maybe didn't start this past weekend. But like I said, getting on the field and at least showing that he has something to offer, I think is a really good step for him.
Joe, did you watch any of this match?
I did. Yeah, I watched a lot of it.
So on paper, it shows that I believe Danny De Witt was suspended for this match, just going through the who scored kind of box score. It shows him as in behind the central striker, which I didn't expect to see this early on. Is that where he was kind of playing as things panned out in the match itself?
Yeah, he had some freedom to roam, but he was essentially, as I saw it, a number 10, or at least the most advanced of those players. You mentioned the DeVitt suspension there. That's key for Azed because he started a lot of games for them in central midfield. From what I understand, and I haven't seen a ton of the other central midfielders in Azed's team, Georgie maybe brings something a little bit different in that he's a little smoother on the ball. He's a little less aggressive defensively, so there could be some chopping and changing here of the midfield based on the opponent, based off of form, all of that stuff. I don't know exactly how the minutes are going to break down between Mihailović and the other players in this team. But again, like I said, regardless of what the situation is around Georgie, still, I think, a very good sign that he's playing and showed some things on the field this weekend.
So I think we're all going to go with a thumbs up to Georgie Mihailović. But I'm saying thumbs down, final one for me, for Scotland not being able to deal with rain, Graham. What's this about Dumbarton being unprepared? I'm confused.
What a plot twist. I mean, if there's any country in the world that should be able to deal with rain, it's ours. But yeah, thumbs down to the Dumbarton groundsman who somehow didn't notice the pitch was waterlogged until I had left the house to travel to the match. There is a video on the TSS Plus Patreon of the shortest away day in history, where basically I got to the pie shop and turned back around, which, to be honest, is my daily routine most days anyway. But nonetheless, yeah, the only match in all of Scotland postponed. That was not what I was hoping for on my Saturday afternoon.
Is your go-to pie shop, is there a pun in the title, or is it just pretty straightforward and no nonsense?
Like More Than Meets the Pie or something.
See,
like that?
How easily that came to you tells me that's the name of the store.
No, it's not. But I think there's maybe more to More Than Meets the Pie in Dunfermline or something like that. Yeah, that did come to me very easily,
which makes
me think it is a real pie shop.
Actual question. Looking at the table for the Scottish Championship, I believe it is. Not the Championship. But like, how is it divided? Because I see like Stirling Albion, then Dumbarton, then a line. East Fife, Sten, Housemuir, then a line. So is like the playoff 1-2 and whoever wins, wins?
No. So I'm not sure what table you're looking at, but Dumbarton goes, or whoever finishes first, hopefully it'll be Albion. Mm-hmm. They go straight up,
okay.
And then 2, 3, and 4 go into the playoffs with the team that finishes 11th from the team above, from the league above.
I gotcha. So, okay.
Yeah.
So
it's playoffs at the moment is looking likely, but we're only 4 points behind. You'll see then that table. There's a divide between Dumbarton and us and the rest of the league. It is between the two teams.
Like, you have a plus 17 goal difference, and everyone else is like 6 or negative. So I feel like it should
that's
be
because they don't have Kai Fotheringham.
That's the difference right there. That's the difference right there. And then João Félix is, or excuse me, Rafael Leão. Maybe João Félix is a backup too. We get you an all-star team,
sure,
in Scotland. But gentlemen, on that rambling note, I think we have done some weekend reviewing. We talked Spain. We talked Italy, we talked FA Cup, and a little bit of Scotland too, and a little bit of the Netherlands in there. We will be back with much more content this week. Many more shows still to come. For now, Joe Lowry, thank you for your thumbs up, your thumbs both up and down. There we go. Got there eventually.
Yeah, right back at you, Taylor.
Graham, thank you as well, my friend.
Thank you, Taylor, and to your thumbs as well.
Appreciated. Listeners, thank you for having thumbs if you have them, and we will talk to you again tomorrow.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code The Athletic and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.